Will you turn and face this way, please? The smell of these paper wipes. Oh.
Mm-hmm. It's all time we're going to check and see, but that's okay.
It's our beautiful for me.
They get them.
Reminds me of Jasmine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they make a statement.
They do. They do. Mm-hmm. And there's one over by the bill that's just peeking up. Mm-hmm. And it's so cute. And it's when they move them, it's briefly waking up. They're so cute.
What shall we look at this evening?
Phew.
I just, first of all, it was an extremely non-stop day.
Yes. with those golden laughs arriving in the morning.
In fact, I think I logged more steps today than I have ever logged at the bridge walk.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And, but as I sat down tonight, I was just so grateful for the rhythm of work, mm-hmm. and eating and group and, you know, just, uh-huh. just the wonderful rhythm of the monastery. Uh-huh. I just felt that, you know, sometimes the rapids are going fast and sometimes slow, but it's, yeah, it's just a nice rhythm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that however all over the place the energy seems, mm-hmm. there's something that we come back to that is predictable,
mm-hmm.
in the
yeah.
structure of it.
Yeah.
The rhythm of it.
Yeah.
Allows us to touch back to that grounded sense of this is what feeling coming back here feels like.
Yes, and it is. It's that coming back here. You know, it's just so different than, you know, past experiences of extremely busy days, because there is always that coming back and coming mm-hmm. back and coming mm-hmm. back. And,
yeah.
You know, and that's really lovely.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to look at, something. on Sunday at the kickoff, one of the questions we were asked is, what are you not allowed to do?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that question for me was, I'm not allowed to let go of responsibility and walk forward unfettered.
Mm-hmm. Not allowed to surrender responsibility mm-hmm. and walk forward unfettered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had more of a visual on it than I didn't. It was kind of like a poem. I didn't really know what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the mind wanted to come in and go, what do you mean? You can't just walk away and leave all your responsibilities. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And so, last night I had a reflective listening call.
Uh-huh.
And yesterday was a hard day. You know, it's a hard day. Just a lot of voices and a lot of worry, and you know, it's just wow. So, it's an amazing experience. So, I started to talk, and then all of a sudden, I started seeing what the answer to that mm-hmm. question was all about,
mm-hmm.
and it just like just kept. Kind of just kept mm-hmm. pouring out, and it was so this is what I've seen so far about it. I'm going to go blank, but one of the things I saw is responsibility has been an excuse my whole life mm-hmm. to not be free.
Mm-hmm. Responsibility has been your excuse your uh-huh. whole life not to be free
and not to have a big life.
Not to have a big life,
yeah. Because, uh-huh. you know, it's always been, well, I've got these things I'm responsible for, I can't do that, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that, I gotta, you know, I gotta take care of them, and then I, you know, and I just saw how it just had gone, how I've gone on forever,
mm-hmm.
Dragging this
what you should do.
What I should do around mm-hmm. instead of, and it never was any of those should do's.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, on the surface, the answer could be from a conditioned place. It's just an interesting. It's what the voices were having a field day. Which, well, if you're the right person, you have to be the responsible mm-hmm. person. How can you just walk off and do whatever it is that you want to do?
Yeah.
But to hold it as a koan allows the answer to be revealed in terms of what that answer from life actually means.
Yeah.
And for you, the intuition is it was an excuse. It was a way by which you're not allowed to have a large life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the awareness that was actually an illusion.
Yeah.
It was a conditioned imposition of a structure.
Yeah. You might say it was like, it was just a handy excuse to not step in to my life.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like I could always blame something else.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
And would carry that around as this burden mm-hmm. of blame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, I guess the bit was a, you know, the bit.
It was all up to me, I
think. Of course, it's not my fault because, mm-hmm. you know, I got saddled with this stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
I got saddled with this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if that wasn't for that,
I could do that.
I could do that. I could, you know, things would just be so much different.
Yeah.
And it just kept coming up. And I just put so much energy behind it. It was just like my body was like, you know, just vibrating with energy.
Mm-hmm.
And just clearly seeing that, you know, there's nothing to carry forward.
There's nothing to carry forward.
There's nothing. And
what you don't need to carry forward is the illusion of the should.
Yeah.
When it isn't, in other words, the recognition that, I mean, it is true, it's one of those really interesting places to look at because it is a koan.
Uh-huh.
And on one side of it, all of this that has been made up that keeps us stuck, that we can blame and say, okay, well, you know, if I didn't have a kid or if I didn't have these responsibilities, then I could waltz off into the sunset. It creates the duality between two things that are not really
mm-hmm.
true,
mm-hmm.
right? The choice is not between those two things.
Exactly.
The choice is really not to feel like this is something that I have been given to do that prevents me from doing something else.
Yeah.
The orientation that we're looking at is, all right, so this is what I have to do. So this is dropping in from life. So instead of looking at how I can't do that and using all of these things as excuses, it's like, okay, this is here and this is here.
Uh-huh.
So now let's see how to make it possible rather than how do I see it as not something I can do.
Yeah, that's the place I was. It's not dropping all of those responsibilities.
That's right.
It's
expanding
it's
the awareness of
the
possibility.
Exactly. It's like stepping forward into those responsibilities, but without carrying any baggage.
Oh, the should
say it of the shoulds behind it, and then. I mean, I can see it. I can't say it,
yeah.
But it's like then the relationship to whatever it is the responsibility then,
mm-hmm.
if it's in front of me,
mm-hmm.
is clean.
Yes,
mm-hmm. It's absolutely clean. There's nothing like, you know, it's a choice over and over and over again, just in that moment,
mm-hmm.
you know. To choose to be in relationship with whatever it is that I am responsible to at that moment.
Mm-hmm. So let's keep on tracking. So the intuition is that if I am here for whatever it is that is here to attend to, and I have dropped that conversation or that orientation that makes this something that prevents me from doing something else, then there's a purity about just being here, and mm-hmm. it's the purity of being present to the moment.
Yeah.
I'm not in a dualistic orientation of I have to do this, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I'm just here,
and
here there is that which is being given by life for me to attend to.
Exactly.
So it's really, it redefines responsibility, doesn't it?
It was very
subtle. Sorry, I didn't
mean to project.
Well, it seems like a very subtle place.
Okay. That's not usually a word I get applied. It feels like the things I'm working at.
Well, those are wide projections.
That's true. Okay. Anyway, you know, it was just, it was awesome.
Yes. It was, I project, one of those things that we intuitively grasp the magnitude of, but find very hard to articulate.
Yeah, exactly. And it was so, you know, it was like at each step there would, you know, conditioned mind would come in and tell me what that meant. And then there would be another insight following that that would clarify and take it out of the hands of conditioned mind, you know, and just and kind of just kept unfolding that, you know. And then, you know, then there's the practical application, but the practice of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what has just been arising, you know, I don't know, what's just been arising today often is the whole thing about, it's presence and that other folks in life, everything, none of that exists except when we call it up into existence.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. None of it exists until it's like there.
Yes. So, give me an example. Are you saying that, for example, my responsibility to, say, a person is an abstract concept? If that person is not here, I'm really not responsible to them, but I can be in endless stories about how I'm in bondage to taking care of this person.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's really not real till they are in front of you to take care of.
Exactly. And then I don't even know what will be my job
to do. Yeah.
You know.
Who knows? They might be there to take care of you.
Exactly. You know. And just see that endless. Yeah, the endless conversation that just wants to make the whole thing real, make them real, make the situation real, and all of that, and it's not real, you know. And it was, I think it was something I was listening to the guy saying, you know, it's like we have to call other folks up in other situations. We have to call them up and noodle them for them to really, you know, to exist.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah. And if we are going to condition places about it, it's our experience. Because I'm thinking about somebody when they're not here.
Mm-hmm.
So they only exist in my thinking, in my thoughts.
Yeah.
They're not here, right here, in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's true.
Mm-hmm.
It is our experience.
Yeah.
That they don't exist until we think about them.
Yeah.
So that responsibility is the same process, right? It becomes a thing because we attend to it. Give it shape, give it energy, give it momentum, give it power.
I could just see how, you know, you know, various tasks, jobs, whatever, so I'm off getting noodles, you know, like, it's that carrying that burden along that is just so not necessary or life affirming.
Yeah, it's not necessary or life affirming. So the answer really is not that you walk away from responsibility, but you walk away from
the thinking that creates the responsibility as a thing.
Exactly.
That then is, that is a burden on the moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
Right? It's the burden on the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the weight of that karmic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thought.
Yeah.
Pattern.
Yeah.
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 Very much the what the samskara is, right? There's an orientation, a tendency that keeps getting attended to, that gets built up.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
that is there
mm-hmm.
as the default
mm-hmm.
unless until you stop attending to it.
Stop attending to it. Yeah. Anyway, it's, you know, with that, that one question we just
who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah, well, it's so, to me, what I appreciate about the inquiry is it didn't get taken on the level of the answer. I'm not allowed to leave my responsibility and move forward unfettered.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, I quit everything and walk off into the sunset
right.
would be the conditioned interpretation of that, but that wasn't it. It was like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
I don't even know what this means.
Yeah.
I'm open to it being revealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets us to that context place, which is so powerful.
Yeah, which is interesting. I mean, I don't think I ever said that, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I don't know. You know, it's just like, I don't know. Life just wanted to open that door for me for some reason, you know. It's like, because it was true when I first started, you know, and I often answer those questions like, okay, answered that one, answered that one, answered that one. Next,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, what, and then, but that one was just time to...
Exactly,
yeah.
We don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We
well, and then we get to have those experiences of, you label them, right, I have an experience of life seeking me.
Mm. I love that.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember you referring to that in group recently, and that experience.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's a glorious place in practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had not cut certain doors. And
Sequoia.
Yeah. Take a look at this. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that was dropping in so often as such a good example of that, where we are asked to look at our conditioned notions of responsibility is the Buddha waking up one day and deciding he's going to leave his family,
mm-hmm.
his kingdom,
mm-hmm.
his kid, his wife in search of something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That would be very irresponsible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then to go to, well, what is it that I'm being called to attend to?
Yeah.
That invitation from life.
Yeah.
Is really the only thing that I'm truly responsible for.
Yeah, that's the other thing that arose in the inquiry, just that's the, it's being true to, I call it the heart, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's the true responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And all that other is, as long as it's just being responsible to that in each moment, then that's it.
Yeah, and we spend our lifetime calibrating to that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Thank you. How fun, Cameron.
That seemed to bring up something similar that I've been experiencing, in that I've been working, doing a process map. On a place where I get stuck
mm-hmm.
over and over and over, and so I was doing that and then doing a two-handed recording about it, and when the person is stuck, the person is so stuck. I mean, just really stuck,
mm-hmm.
and believes. What she hears is, you have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't know, she has no idea how.
Uh-huh.
It seems impossible, the things that she's has to do. But it also seems imperative that she must do it.
Mm-hmm.
because she sees that the reason, or somebody else sees, and she's privy to the seeing from the other person, sees that it's not real that she can't do it. It's an old karmic story. But it's been there so long, and it's so deeply hooked in there somewhere that it does catch her.
Uh-huh. So as you were talking, Cameron, so this is a process map of a place where you find it's a familiar pattern of feeling stuck.
Yes, yes.
And what you're tuning into for this person who feels stuck is she believes she has to do what is being asked of her.
Yeah.
She believes that she doesn't know how to do it.
Absolutely. She can't figure that out.
She can't figure it out.
Yeah.
But she's also aware that she can't do it is an old story. Or is that an awareness from outside the map?
Well, I think what happened is when the map went on and there were the steps getting to a place, actually, that was kind of a dead end, actually, until we got into the left-handed part of it. And that's where some of the understanding came.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that the belief that she had, the understanding was that the belief was an old belief that has just gone underground. It's not something that I know that it isn't true,
mm-hmm.
intellectually and from practice and everything, but it's like the metaphor that came up, it's sort of like a ghost from conditioning
uh-huh.
that comes out sometimes and haunts the house
uh-huh.
and scares the children.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And
she falls for it.
She falls for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found it really, even though I might have intellectually been able to lay that out before, the two-handed exercise gave me enough distance from it that it just felt so refreshing to see it at a distance mm-hmm. that it's not, none of it is true. It's just an old repeating story that gets caught in the web that's in there that made it believable.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
she was yeah.
Yeah. So if I'm tracking, the two-handed recording assisted you to see that even though there was lots of practice that assisted you to know that it's not true.
Yeah.
Somehow making those movements and seeing that even if there was an intellectual understanding of the truth of it, there was still a way in which it was believable to someone.
Yeah.
And that was overlooked.
Yeah.
And so to override that person's experience while they're caught in the map, because we're at the surface of the map and not in touch with the ghost that's haunting the house that the child
right.
is believing in.
Right.
There's still the experience of being stuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a child that's being asked to do something that she's not old enough to do, that she realizes the parents are insisting that she does it. And she knows somehow if they're insisting, she must be able to do it, but she doesn't have a clue
mm-hmm.
how to do it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
as I project, there's so much compassion that's where she's stuck, right? That's
yeah.
what really, she was never seen. She was never actually seen till that two-handed recording exercise that
not
the
that
practitioner
way.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And so the practitioner can work with that.
Right.
But there's still a remnant of belief there.
That's right.
For which needed to be accepted and seen.
Yes.
And once embraced, then it
yes.
isn't what haunts the map, right? Because she's not in that, she was never acknowledged in the map.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's probably the real pain of it.
That's right.
That's the real pain of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she was when I did that.
Exactly.
When
yeah.
the mentor came in
yeah.
and talked to her and reassured her that, you know, that's an old story and you know, you are, because I think that the belief that's behind it is that you can't, you're not the person who, mm-hmm. and who can, and that's the part that's not true.
Well, here, try this on for size.
Okay.
Right? I don't know this, but this is something to look at and explore. Because at some level, she isn't the person who can.
True.
Yeah. But she keeps saying she can't.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
she keeps being asked to do something
that
she cannot do. And she keeps saying, I can't do it.
Right.
And so,
right.
You know, that's the feeling of stuckness and everything
yeah.
else. So if we acknowledge that she's young and she's really not able to do it, we can say that we can set her free. It's not your responsibility.
Right.
There is someone else for whom it's not true.
Yes.
Right?
There you go. That's it. That's
so
it.
They are both true. They're just not true for the same person.
That's right. That's
and
right.
So the movement that we get to make once we see mm-hmm. that they're, for this person can't do it. So you can go play. Now let's find the mm-hmm. person for whom it's not the truth mm-hmm. and have the skill to do it and let's mm-hmm. ask her.
Mm-hmm.
We start to get confused about sub-personalities, right? So let me translate it as, there's a process that can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a process that can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Both processes can exist simultaneously based on what is being attended to.
Right.
If I realize, if there's awareness that the process being attended to is the process that can't, then we can embrace that in compassion and move to that perspective in which both truths, both processes can exist. So I can call on the process that can.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now it's an inclusive place where something that cannot do and something that can do both can coexist.
And so I know when I get into that corner, it feels like a corner.
Yeah.
That this kind of young energy is in and just can't do it. Whenever I feel that, I know that's who's there.
That's right.
And that's not the person I need to get to the place of the person who can't. And that was something that was a little bit confusing when I was doing the process map, because I did feel confused, like there was more energy than just one there, and that's why the one who could was there too.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so then what we practice is movement, right? So what was not in awareness was the truth for her.
Yes.
That got brought into awareness.
Yes.
And from that place of expanded awareness, as soon as I feel that way, awareness can register, that's the process that
yes.
can't. Let's attend to that, bring
embrace
it in compassion, embrace it, and then shift to
yes.
that which can. Which is only possible from that expanded awareness where both are true, not from the collapsed awareness where only one is true.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that is beautiful. Thank you so much for that. And today when I was doing aerobics, I had this experience after having kind of all of this stuff swishing around, and it wasn't nearly as clear as it is now that we've discussed it. But something had happened where I was doing aerobics and I was just feeling this new kind of way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I felt this energy. I mm-hmm. felt like I haven't had that energy for a long time, you know, for whatever reason, but whatever happened yesterday with this process
mm-hmm.
freed up
yeah.
somebody who is much much stronger and
uh-huh.
Was wanting to do it more enthusiastically, and it was just a really great feeling being in my body, and I knew it came from that work the
yeah.
day before.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
I mean, we have a felt sense of something being liberated.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As a consequence of which the life force is freed up.
Yes, it was.
It was manifested right. in your
yeah.
in your exercise. Yeah.
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 That's a beautiful thing.
It really is, isn't
yeah.
it? It really is. And it gives us, again, without making meaning around it, it seems to me that's what we're doing. We're liberating all of those places where the energy's stuck.
Yeah.
By some
karmic knot, right? Mm-hmm. Some orientation that hasn't been seen, and the true seeing freezes.
And the seeing frees it.
Yeah.
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 Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Seems to be a theme tonight.
Oh, yeah.
So I also had this experience of doing sitting under recording around a process map. I had a chance to talk about this a little bit on a phone call today. And it's been this remarkable experience. So I was getting messages that there was a, I'm involved in a lot of political activity. So I've been getting these messages. I can't say I was suffering. It's been really interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. Getting these messages about, this isn't you, you don't have time, you don't really want to do this. And what I was seeing, what I finally came through, I mean, I haven't done the process map for a long time, mm-hmm. and I had total resistance to doing it, but I signed up for this program, so so I did the process map, and I did all these little things, and all of a sudden I saw what all of these are saying is, this is not who you are. Mm-hmm. This is not you. Mm-hmm. And so I put that in the middle, this is not you. And then what arose was, this was so helpful, I wouldn't have seen it, but for that, who's telling me this?
Uh-huh.
And how do they know?
Uh-huh.
And so where that really launched me into through the mentor, through the two-handed recording, was all the fictions involved in that. So first of all, that there is a me,
uh-huh.
that there is someone who can tell me who that is,
uh-huh.
and that just someone who's telling me who it is trying to protect me.
Uh-huh.
And
The fiction and all of that, me. Someone who can tell you that,
yeah.
and then it's trying to convince you that that's to protect you.
Right. Yeah. It's control in the guise of protection.
Control in the guise of protection.
Yeah.
Because it can't send you the control; it can send you the protection.
That's right. So I mean, it just like opened up this whole uh-huh. thing about this is nonsense,
mm-hmm.
and then I have a series of back and forths. With the two other recordings, and really came out with when the heart responds to something, mm-hmm. There really is no self there. Mm-hmm. When it happens spontaneously, it's very impersonal.
Yes, yes, yes. When it happens spontaneously, it really is impersonal. I had this awareness recently about everything that is a person is ego. It's the process of ego, right?
Yeah.
That the whole sense of a someone gets created in that process of ego. So the personalization is that.
Yeah, that was my sense of it. That all the opinions, the attitudes, the beliefs, the messages, the talking, that all of that is ego recreating itself over and over and over and over and over. And then saying to me, this is who you are,
mm-hmm.
and that's who you aren't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not real.
No,
and
it's not real in the sense that there is no. It's in the sense of it's a program.
It's a program
that speaks in pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
As a consequence of which, we imbue person on form.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it felt like, and what it felt like was that when there's that spontaneous response of what feels like life responding to life.
Mm-hmm.
Since it's life responding to life, it's not embodied in any particular person. This being may experience it, but it doesn't have to do with this person.
That's right.
And
because it's not received from the process that personalizes.
That's right. That's right. And then there's all this other stuff going on over here. It's just its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what the mentor was saying was that. What I'm hearing you say, said to me, is that when that happens, that spontaneous response, it just opens up this huge space. And from a conditioned place, that's a scary place,
mm-hmm.
which is why we need ever-expanding faith and development of trust. But in the moment when those things happen, when that kind of thing arises, it actually doesn't feel scary.
No.
Mm-hmm. It has to be told that it's scary. and then I was seeing that much of the time I, in fact, live in ego and in identification. And so sometimes there's that spontaneous, I'm just there.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, most of the time, frankly, I'm identified, more or less. And when it's, when I'm there, that's where there's that choice of, I'm here. Uh-huh. I'm in this. I can choose not to be. And it often doesn't feel as clean or spacious as that other place, but there really is a choice there. And what I, the other thing I was seeing that was so helpful was that in that big space, there's conditioning, all that other stuff is not a problem. It doesn't have to be solved. It doesn't have to be owned. It doesn't have to be disowned. Uh-huh. It just is there.
Yeah.
But if I'm here, I'm not there.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
It.
Yeah. So I track all the way. But so there was one point where I lost you. So let me try to reflect. That spontaneous place that arises doesn't feel personal. And that there's an awareness that that's not where you are a lot of the time, mm-hmm. that there is that place of identification.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are in that place of being here, and this isn't a problem that you have to either solve or own or whatever mm-hmm. else, there's the ability to make the choice for being here, and that's the choice that you get to make.
Mm-hmm. Well, and sometimes, it's, you know, it's that place that Sherry talks about being identified but knowing you're identified.
Yes.
That place is what I'm talking about.
Yes.
It's the place of choice.
Yes.
So sometimes
okay.
it's just kind of
what I wasn't tracking. Yeah.
But sometimes I'm in.
Yeah.
But I can see that I can choose out.
Yeah.
And so it just felt huge. And, you know, how many, I mean, I've been practicing for 25 years, I think, and how many times have we talked about it's not personal and, you know, there's really no you there. And I was like,
Yeah, and that's an experience.
But then I really have that experience of truly it is not personal.
Yeah.
It's very authentic.
Yes.
But it's not personal. It has nothing to do with this person, nor does that.
Yeah.
Nor, and what I know I was saying was, and it doesn't have anything to do with all those other people either, that this person is so critical of.
Yeah.
We're all just caught in the system.
That's right.
Or we step out.
Yeah. Well, I think when we sort of say it's not related to this person, what we're actually saying is this is a collection of processes that we happen to label with a personal pronoun.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all it is. It's a collection of processes that we happen to label with a personal pronoun. And so the awareness is all of it. That person, the tree, the awareness that's arising, the impulse that's responding, as well as that program that's running, they're all just processes, right? That just go on. And what my awareness of it is, it just happens to be happening, and the receptor for all of the awareness of those things happening happens to be another process running in this node.
Yeah.
Right? So that's it. And
yeah.
So it's a one of those kind of experiences.
You know what it reminded me of? I think it was in that book that I was sort of in vogue here a few years ago called Power and Force or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it was in that, but it might have been another one where this person talks about even ideas are just out there.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like we walk through them.
Yeah.
You know? And we think they're ours.
Yeah.
But they aren't. It's like, ooh, it goes,
yeah.
My idea. But it's all.
Yeah. And I think it's that my comes from that operating process here that can claim, you know, and all of these thought streams, this one got my attention because the receptor can pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's about as personal as it gets, in that the karma, the conditioning and the survival mechanism has tuned the receptor for that thought to become my thought or in my field of awareness in this moment in time. That's about all, and it's like as random as that.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I was seeing in terms of going back to that map too was that all of that telling me who I am, telling me what is how conditioning exists. That's all. And that has nothing to do with me either.
Mm-hmm.
Even conditioning has nothing to do with me because it's just keeping itself alive.
Yes, it's a self-generating process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it self-generates by talking about itself using I and you as pronouns.
Right.
Right? And so we're conditioned to receive it and believe it has the I that's being talked about is me.
Mm-hmm.
rather than the I that's being talked about is it.
Right.
Right? I'm not that. That's
right.
True. You're not.
Right.
Right? You're not that is how we, it's that subject object confusion in the mental process that once we cotton on to and don't believe in the personal pronoun, we believe in the, what is the processes, there's the ability to go, it's got nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, it really has nothing to do with anything.
It has really nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then we start to trust that impulse, the call and response
mm-hmm.
that we're talking about, which is, okay, well, I was called, there was the response, and then there's going to be another call, and there's not going to be another response,
mm-hmm.
and that's all that's ever going to happen
mm-hmm.
in terms of how the energy gets manifested into the reality, if at all.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. Thank you. How fun. Rebecca.
This is fun. Gosh. And I thought I was doing a process map and recording.
We're all doing the same program, aren't we?
It doesn't really have anything to do with what I wanted to talk about, but I just like being on TV. It was a very interesting and fun exercise, and I'm sure it does actually have something to do with
how you do anything and how you do everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there have just been connections all through what's been said, so let's see what that way gets made. Okay, so I recently learned of an exchange that Gandhi had with a journalist. So the journalist challenged him, said, "Mr. Gandhi, can you sum up your life's work in 3 words?
Wow, you want to kick that journalist?
I know. And the opposite of this, Gandhi, you've never resisted a challenge. So he said, yes. And he said, renounce and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that just leapt out at me. And so there's that. So
yeah, because look at what could be oxymoronic in every way of looking at it.
No kidding. Mm.
And so not the case in our experience.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we can enjoy without renouncing.
Well,
but
yeah. And we, yes. That's exactly what I'm focusing in on, right? So, you know, on Friday I have this coaching call with the Conscious Compassion Action, and I love this whole process so much. And the irony is not lost on me. I am in a monastery, you know? And not at all in touch with what drove most people to this,
mm-hmm.
you know, practice opportunity. The frustration, the, you know, everything that's going on in the world and all that. And there was a day, and I was in the thick of all of that. And it was... I feel like there has been something that has been renounced, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so if I'm following, your life before coming to the monastery was conscious, compassionate action in the political arena. You were organizing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find yourself in a monastery where that is not your life, but you're facilitating that process for other people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so there's the awareness that something has been renounced for you to be able to enjoy, I project, what you love the most.
Yes. And there's huge enjoyment.
And there's huge enjoyment. Yeah.
And I just wonder, because you know, for years, really, at least 5 years, I was trying so hard to get this enjoyment in the exact same way. While before the whole political stuff was renounced,
mm-hmm.
I was doing, I mean, I can't tell you how similar everything was, you know? Even Sherry's blog on Conscious Compassionate Action, I'm not saying I could have written it, but I had seen all that and had been in some way trying to whatever and put it down and
you know, get workshops. I mean, I have workshops called Politics from Center, Mindful Citizenship, you know, Awakening Action, you know, every kind of configuration I could possibly do to do this. Mm-hmm. But what I'm suspecting the critical missing piece was the renouncing.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it a little bit in the kickoff, right? We can have whatever we want, so long as it's not on my terms.
That's what
I project Gandhi was pointing at, right?
Yes.
What gets renounced is the mind.
Yes.
And then we can enjoy anything.
Yeah.
And it just so happens to be, I don't know how to say this, except from every mystic, every saint, and my limited experience, and I project your limited experience too, it does happen to be one of those structures of the awakening process.
Yes. Yes.
Right? That what we have to surrender is ego. And at some point, we keep doing that. I give this, I mean, I surrender this, I renounce this, I renounce this, I renounce this, I renounce this. And then we get to renounce control over renouncing it.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Yes.
That's what Cameron was. We were looking at it. Yes. Where life goes, yeah, you cannot be an enlightened ego, but you cannot you cannot renounce the ego that wants to be enlightened. And so life has to do it for us.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And I think that's what's going on in this writing process.
You're recognizing the effort to renounce the ego and then surrendering at some point and letting it happen.
Because it's like, I'm telling you, I want to renounce so that I can get the goodies. And
if there's even a smidgen of goodies in a thought process, it's not surrender on life's terms, right?
Well, and that's okay. So this brings me to sex, and I'll make the connection because I bet you can't see how that leads.
I can't see
So last week I was talking to Sherry about sexual energy and all this kind of stuff. And she was, when you go back and you listen to those recordings, I was so clueless. I'm so glad I have a recording of it. She was leading me very gently to this place that I had no idea. But what she was drawing the parallel to when I let go of sugar in my life, and then how, you know, just some of the elements of that, and that maybe this whole process around sex is a similar thing. In other words, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not having sex, and I'd like to have sex. But not having sex and renouncing sex, I'm seeing are two just different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because even thinking about, well, you know, someday, when I, maybe if I, you know, even just the thought, as we were just talking about, the thought process, or the anything. I mean,
it's desire.
We'll say more.
Well, it's the desire for it. The longing for it is an energy leak.
Yes.
Right? So there's that place where it's not available to have.
Right.
So it's not here to attend to.
So by all indications, it's not something that needs to be renounced because it's not even here.
Right. But you're aware intuitively that it's always present.
Yes.
In the thought process that is being attended to.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
To think about karma is a thought.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, before it is behavior or action.
Yeah.
And so it's always there, and therefore it has to be not attended to.
Yes.
Actively.
Yes. Right?
Because even if it isn't there in the form of indulging in it, it's still there in the form where it has the attention. It sounds as if what you're intuiting is you not having sex and renouncing sex are two different things.
Yes.
And one's a mental process.
Yeah.
And the other one is a physical process.
Yes. And that when you said that, the desire, I thought all this time that about that process, I thought that it was like dropping in a heart's desire to someday have a partner and a life, you know, after community life is over, then I'm going to do this, or I want this, or I hope life will give this to me, or, you know, whatever.
Goodies, Rebecca.
It felt so
true
that I felt it must be there from life.
Yeah. That is so pernicious, right?
Yes.
It's because of that line about karma on the sandwich board.
Yeah.
Which is, it feels the most familiar thing is karma.
Yes.
The most uncomfortable thing might be your life impulse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like that place, there's that arising, which to ego feels scary or ego feels familiar.
Yeah. Well, and because two things are coming up, and I can remember, I'll say one, and hopefully I'll remember the other. But because what feels, I know, I went through it again here with my kids. You know, my adult kids. So it felt awful to renounce them. And I don't tell them I've renounced them because I think, you know, they might understand. but in a way, I have. You know? I mean, in a big way, I have.
Yeah.
You know,
the way I would reframe that, right, Rebecca, the bond towards a child is so karmic.
Yes.
Right? That's what you're supposed to experience with your child. And you do experience it. You know, you carried the person, you've raised the person, you've invested all this life energy. They're of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, considering renouncing that, the object of all of that, it feels awful. But what you're really renouncing is the karma.
Oh, exactly.
Not really the child.
And that's why I can make that joke.
Exactly. From a certain, it's the power versus force. At a certain level of consciousness, you only interpret what is your experience,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
For her, renouncing the mother, oh my God, my mom's renounced me?
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to get at with the whole karma thing is that it's only the attachment,
yeah,
that has been renounced.
Yes.
The love, no way.
Well, because it goes back to what we were talking about with Penny. We think love is for an object.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? For a person.
Yeah.
But love is love unconditionally for all things.
Yeah.
It's a process. Right, it doesn't have to have a person attached. We assign the person. We experience it because it's mirrored from a form reflecting it back to us.
Yeah. Well, and it goes back to what Sequoia was saying about when we think about people. You know, so so you know, if for those of us who are really devoted our lives to living in the moment and being with what is, you know,
I recognize that, for example, for me, when I wasn't missing my mother.
Yeah.
What a horrible person you are that you're not missing your mother. Well, my mom's not here.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right?
I mean, isn't it such a, it's one of the things we write in our, you know, greeting cards. I'll be thinking about you, or I'll be, you know, and that is in some way saying, the sentiment is, we are all one, and no matter what, you're with me.
Yes.
That's what we're really saying.
Yes. In truth, because in that reality, there is no difference in that process of the life force.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Truly, you actually have a felt experience of that non-separation, that non-loving.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then, okay, so then the second thing...
It
goes back to what you were saying about, I don't know if I'll be able to say it, but something like that there's an attrition, or that life tells us when it's time to renounce something or something like that.
Well, it does it for us, right?
It puts it there?
Well, at some point, it's not your, I'm going to say these words because that's the best way to describe the process, but you know what I mean by that, in the sense of, well, I'm making the effort, and I'm making the effort, and I'm making the effort, and at some point you just go, okay, well, whatever, I can't do this. As soon as you get to, I can't do this, it happens.
Yeah.
So how does it happen? What makes that happen?
Yeah.
We can call that being thought. Right?
Hmm.
And so we think of only one side of this process, which is the movement from here. What's the movement from here? What's the movement from here is not an awareness till we let go of this movement from here, and suddenly we're aware of being of that movement that is towards,
yeah.
Not just against, right? But that in that wonderfully magical way, it happens that way.
Okay, I'm kind of having this surreal experience, and okay, so I guess so last week when I was talking to Sherry about sex, I had this feeling of a little bit outside my body watching this person that was saying all these things that this one was watching wasn't feeling at all, but like, it must be how I am because it's coming out of my mouth, you know? And what if this is all just life doing this?
Yeah. And the answer is I don't know, right? But it's your experience.
But it has that feel of I'm not doing it. Yeah. It's being done. Mm-hmm. This whole... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
renouncing thing and everything.
Yeah,
you know, and
we're being renounced. We're being sought. Yeah,
and I don't know how it all. I don't know.
You don't. And I think part of what once we get past the self hate, like we down to consciousness, now we get to be intimate with all of these things that would never have never occurred in a conditioned mind.
Yeah.
It's almost as if, at least my experience of it is, you drop one way of seeing and develop a whole bunch of other ways of seeing. Mm-hmm. You go, huh? Right?
Uh-huh.
I have never experienced life as a set of random processes.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it's the image of it is, I guess, you know, you're used to perceiving the world in a certain way, and then you get to experience the world in a different way. And when the transition happens, it kind of feels weird,
yeah.
Or unbalanced, or I'm having vertigo here,
yeah.
Right? I don't know if you ever went to that one of those things where you have zero gravity, right? And suddenly you're floating and you don't have any way of being grounded.
Oh, no.
It really shifts your perspective because you think that you walk on this planet and there's an orientation that comes from being grounded versus an orientation where you're floating on the... floating on the...
Wow.
Yeah, it's like it basically blows conditioned mind.
Yeah. Well, you know the Zen story that has been coming up that has just lately, and it before it was like this is one of many Zen stories that I absolutely do not get, but I got it, or I kind of got it.
Go on, drop it, right?
Yeah. Which is that crazy one where you're sitting on top of a 100-foot flagpole and the only way to go is up, and there's something, you know?
Yeah, I do.
What? You know, but that was the feeling.
Yeah, because there is no flagpole.
Yeah.
Right? So it's all made up. You could go up if you wanted to.
Yeah. It's just, there's one little piece about blowing conditioned mind. Yeah. I think it's lost. It's blown.
Thank you.
Is this recording going to be put on the website?
I don't know, but I'll make sure it gets sent to you, Cameron.
Really, this is really, really
yeah.
Good.
Okay, we'll make sure it goes to the group. That's very fun, isn't it?
Very, very, very fun. Mm-hmm.
You? I want to. I wanted to because a lot of it is on my head. Interesting. That's an experience I have in groups sometimes. Is that, and I don't worry about it, but sometimes I don't understand the thing that he's talking about.
Well, it's really cool. That you don't worry about it.
No,
but that's just what I'm present to.
I can worry about it, but it wouldn't help.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a lovely. It's just such a lovely place to be.
And I can tell that it's a really good conversation. I just don't know what it's like. So I want to know about something else. In the kickoff video workshop, Sherry said something like, we're 2018, we're going to look at some childhood things, or we're going to explore all kinds of areas. And we used to say around here, as soon as you sign up for a workshop, it begins. That seems that happened the other day. My very first reflective listening buddy's call, the first one I've ever done. And what about it? You're going to tell you what I saw. I had no idea I was going to talk about this. Just there it was. It was what was happening. So I talked about what was going on. My father would get into this place where he would talk really slowly, and it just bugged me to death. And I've noticed that I can do it too. I got it from him somehow. I can get into that place of not just talking really slowly because I can't. I don't know what syntax, and you know, it's not clear. And I saw how I saw what happens when that goes on, which is a beneficial, a misdirection thing. So I want to be saying something, and the words are there for whatever to say next, and attention goes somewhere to find those words. But what they're directed to is a blank screen. Over and over. And so I really don't know how the next words come out. And I guess someone is in there taking care of me, so that I look like a complete idiot. But very often I have no idea what I said.
So you're aware of a familiar behavior, let's say, which is talking slowly, and paying attention to it, you're watching how it happens. So there's an attempt to express, and then watching the attention go to find the words, but often going towards a blank screen. So there is no words there.
Right.
And so then you're also aware that the words come out, maybe slowly, but there's no awareness of what is said.
Right. Very right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun.
Yeah.
To see that. And
so were you aware, June, that when your attention is going to the blank screen, are you aware it's going to the blank screen?
I've never seen it until Tuesday morning. Never, I never even thought to look at what that is.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just gotta talk to look to see what might be going on there. And then it was just boom, because I've watched stood happening.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because there was awareness when it was happening to pay attention to what's going on. Yeah.
And of course, many things in practice over the years had gone that way. Never thought to look or do an exercise, and all of a sudden it's there. And just the process of how this piece of karma works and or is doing what it's doing. Mm-hmm. And the really good part is there's a good chance that I'll get into it sometime or another, that talking slowly thing, but it won't be the same.
Yes.
Yes.
Something that, so I would project that is one of the reasons why we're looking at all the places we don't normally look. Like going back to a very foundational book to work from, because from a place of expanded awareness, all this practice, our ability to see the patterns that are not in our awareness for inquiry, will shine a light on all of those places where the energy has been stuck that we can relate. Mm-hmm. So something that was a source of irritation, or even a source of avoidance perhaps, now the light of awareness is shines on it. How about I go with the person? And it's transformed into a fun process, and it's never going to be the same again.
Yeah.
Well, and I project that produces a level of acceptance and compassion and all kinds of things which the irritation won't let us see. So if we stop with the irritation, then it's just a block to awareness, rather than, wow, let me look at it, look through it, see what it's about. One of the fun practices that I've been doing recently is every belief, every judgment, what's the belief that stops me from seeing the authenticity in me or in someone else?
So every belief or judgment, what is stopping you from seeing the authenticity in you?
Right. Right. Yeah. So if our intention is to be present to all of life, everything in life, every time there is judgment, let's not say I, every time there is judgment, it's a separation. Right? There's no ability to see, let's call it, the divine in that person. And so if I condemn someone for being weak, right, weakness is it makes you less than. So I'm not going to deal with there's no ability to see the person, because that belief that you should be strong divides the world into all the people who don't deserve to be considered and all the people who are supposed to be considered, right? But if that's what's going on for me, then there's so much here that's not acceptable. And my freedom comes from recognizing that. And once I recognize it here, it's not projected out there. Now I can see a weak person and see something authentic rather than just something weak.
Mm-hmm. I understand that.
But I think that's the fun and the exploration. That whatever it is that blocks us, we get to see differently. And it's fun, because it's got nothing to do with me. I'm going around wiping the glass that allows me to see the rainbow, right?
Mm-hmm. I never in my whole life did I decide to talk slowly. Mm-hmm. or so haltingly that if other people are like me, it's annoying. I never decided to avoid doing them. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was never, there's never any. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and to me, that sort of exploration reveals hidden assumptions, right? It's the ghost in the house that's haunting the child. Until we look at it, we actually don't see all of what's not in awareness. Thank you. We have a couple of more minutes if anyone has anything, otherwise we'll end group. Okay, thank you.